This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Arty Farty Show. And it is my pleasure to be with you this morning, hopefully we can cover a bit of interesting stuff that's happening in the art world, not only the art world, but also on the local scene, New Zealand, Dunedin, and one or two anecdotes that hopefully will titivate you. Is that the word? Yes, I think so. Right. Now, of course, Andy, this is normally hosted by Andy and myself, Ron Esplin. Andy is not here today, however, and we miss him, of course, but we will forge on, and we've got lots of interesting anecdotes to share with you. We always start, or we most often start, with what's happening on the local scene. And, of course, we are looking at the Otago Art Society in this instance, who have just, well, they've just judged their most recent exhibition, which was a very important one for them, an awards exhibition, the Edinburgh Premier Arts Awards exhibition, which is their major exhibition for the year. And the hosting of that exhibition included quite a range of work from national sources as much as local sources. It's not easy to say sources. Okay, so this year's exhibition, it is actually over now. I mentioned it last time, but I didn't know at the time who won what and who and where and why. So I can reveal that at this point in time for those people who would like to know. And there were 174 two-dimensional artworks on display, selected from more than 300 paintings that were submitted, drawings and prints, quite a wide range of formats. And it was selected and judged by Dunedin School of Art principal lecturer Graham Fletcher. And here are the award winners, which I haven't had the chance to mention up until now. The first prize of $3,000 was awarded to Carolyn Kelly for the work Resonate. Second prize of $2,000 went to Jonas Jessen Hansen for Blomst. Third prize of $1,000 went to Gavin Chai for the work Trees, Birds, Bunnies and Bees. There were also two $500 merit awards, which went to Jay Hutchison for Monster and Gemma Baldock for Riot, a name that we often see in the awards. They also had an opportunity, of those visitors who went, to vote for their favourite artwork, to win a $500 People's Choice Award. And Otago Art Society Council and Edinburgh Premier Art Awards exhibition curator Jenny Longstaff said the artworks featured in the exhibition were in a wide range of styles, subjects and all shapes and sizes. And quite a very large number of works were submitted, which made hanging this exhibition quite challenging. So that's the popularity of the Otago Art Society. And I've always urged people who have started painting, they want to know more, that they often can feel a little bit uncertain about their work and not wanting to show it until they were felt they had reached a certain stage. This is where probably the best time to do is just to begin and join the Art Society in Dunedin, and it's a wonderful crowd of people, and they are very encouraging. So apparently the exhibition that we're mentioning, the Edinburgh Premier Art Awards, it comes at the midst of a busy time for the Otago Art Society, and they had hosted the Cleveland Art Awards and its own annual exhibition alongside a variety of other shows. But quite a number of people are now hiring space at the art station, as they call it, to have their own exhibition. So there's an opportunity if you're uncertain about where to display your work. This is a great way to start. So there's also been extensive construction work at the Dunedin Railway Station, and the Society has battled on under all these constraints. However, the awards are announced, and you've just heard them, I'm very glad to say, and an excellent display indeed. And it will keep going from strength to strength. The Dunedin Public Art Gallery has been doing some wonderful things. I wanted to talk about Peter Robinson in a minute, and he had one of the displays which I'd like to talk about, the new the rear window. Quite often it can be overlooked. The rear window actually faces out onto Murray Place, so you tend to it can be forgotten easily unless you're passing that way a lot of the time. And the new in the rear window is an exhibition called Speaking Without Words, and the title is Woman, spelt WOMXN, and Alia Winter is the artist, and it's only a short time that you'll be able to see this video work called Speaking Without Words, and it was created in 2019. And in Speaking Without Words, Alia Winter draws from the statements of pro and anti-trans people and groups to form an amalgamation of spoken and written language. Among these are quotes from writer and scholar Sierra Ahmed, echoes of poet Joss Charles's stylistic adaptions of Chaucerian Middle English, and alternative forms of spelling such as woman, WOMXN, as aforementioned. And the work was first exhibited in 2019 in Hobart, Australia, for Hobiennale, in association with Meanwhile Art Space. And the Tasmanian government at the time was passing reforms to the Birth, Death and Marriages Act, allowing greater civil and political rights for trans people. So, of course, it was a very timely display indeed. Winter said that an intention of this amalgamating technique is to expose and reverse some of the damaging and transmisogynous language used by anti-trans activists. And in this work, she uses a feminist critique to peel back reasonable statements and language, uncovering how language embodies and complicates notions of identity, loss, sex and gender. So there you are. That's something that's a wee bit different, and that's in the rear window. So one tends to possibly overlook it sometimes when it's in the back and to be seen from Moray Place. I wanted to mention about Peter Robinson because he had a wonderful display, and I think it's still going. Yes, I do. I think so. And it's a remarkable work. And I met Peter both at the gallery and in my home. He started his career as a painter, studied arts sculpture at Elam School of Fine Arts from 1985 to 1989. And his journey then saw him play a large part in bicultural debate through the late 80s and early 90s, because he has affiliations with Ngāi Tahu. Once Peter had felt this phase of his career had run its course, and for fear of being perpetually typecast as an identity artist, Peter leapt into new territory and revisited his interest in post-minimalism and arte povera, which he had been drawn to in his first year at ILAM. And that means sort of art by the general populace, I suppose you could say. These movements were to inform the structure, orientation and social impulse of his work throughout the next decade of his career. Peter's use of materials and techniques are also perpetually changing tack. Drawing, painting, sculpture, digital media and installation have all played their part in Peter's huge collection of work. In 2001, Peter and Jacqueline Fraser represented New Zealand in the 49th Venice Biennale. And in 2008, Peter won the Walters Prize and participated in the Istanbul Biennale. And last year, he was included in the Jakarta Biennale. So he's a man on the move by the sounds of things. And he is a most interesting chap because this... exhibition, when I walked into it in the art gallery, it looked like a room absolutely full of all sorts of it seemed to be unrelated initially, and there was written material along the walls, and then it began to slowly dawn on me that the whole thing was in the shape of a waka, and the title of the exhibition, Ka Kai Hopara, and it's a journey of discovery, exploring concepts, materials, and ways of making and seeing. So it's actually an amalgam of work by a whole range of different people, not just Peter. And it takes the material language of modern building and construction to tell that story. And he creates a speculative and open-ended installation that navigates audiences through ideas that have been occupying him over a recent period of research. So, working with aluminium, plastic, paper, pen and ink, he activated a series of overlapping discussions about art, history, migration and storytelling. And he unified the whole thing by sort of producing a waka shape into which these elements were... parked in various ways. His drawings talk to one another across the gallery and across the span of his practice. They introduce new characters into Robinson's existing library of marks and forms and are joined in turn by the works of friends and whānau to create an ever-expanding conversation. So it's a collaborative work. Sculptures inhabit the centre, structures, vehicles, shelters, and travellers that both shore up and disrupt ways of considering migration, occupation, and encounter. Offcuts are Robinson's ahika, continuing to stoke the fires of a continuous history of art making. So I loved the idea, and it was presented exceptionally well. Just to tell you a little bit more about him, he was Kaitahu. Studied sculpture at ILAM School of Fine Arts, and as I said before, and is presently an Associate Professor of Fine Arts and Associate Dean Maori of the Faculty of Creative Arts and Industries. So he's certainly worked his way up the ladder, I suppose. From the late 1980s to the present, his practice has traversed a landscape of ideas and modes, stirring up discussion, unsettling the status quo, and contributing to a robust and internationally engaged discourse around contemporary art from Aotearoa. Robinson spent time living and working in Aotearoa in Dunedin as the Aotearoa New Zealand visiting artist last year. So, not just last year, this year. Yeah, that's right. Pretty up to date, you know. Interesting thing I wanted to, a very important thing that... I'd like to mention is the Marilyn Webb. We lost Marilyn Webb on the 16th of August last year, and she was a remarkable artist and a Dunedinite. I'll just quote her. She said, "I went out and pulled the sky down over me by a feather and folded myself up in the hills." which is a lovely obituary in memory of Marilyn Webb. She was well decorated. She was presented with the ONZM. And we can really take the opportunity to celebrate her remarkable contribution to art locally. And she used for subject matter Central Otago, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And she was an activist, a teacher, and a mentor. She taught art and she championed printmaking, drawn by a deep connection to this wider whenua. Throughout her work, she leaves a legacy of beauty and power for generations to come. Well, I'm also very sad to let you know that Russell Campbell died on August the 14th this year, peacefully at Dunedin Hospital, aged 79 years. He was a loved and loving son of the late Ian and Thelma Campbell, loved brother of Gloria and Sally, loved uncle of his nieces and nephews and great-nieces. A knowledgeable and greatly respected colleague and mentor who is sadly missed by the Regent Theatre and Otago Access Radio, where for a long time he ran a program here about music and films. And he was had been a projectionist in his early days. And he once went to a presentation of his at the Dunedin Art Gallery. And it was, I think it was at the Public Library. He spoke about film making and the life of a man who was a projectionist for the start of his career. There was a service to celebrate Russell's life in the weekend, and that was back in August, on Saturday, August the 19th. And messages can be sent to the Campbell family if you are familiar with, if you were and knew Russell, to PO Box 5013, Dunedin. Leave a message on his page at www.tributes.co.nz, where you can also access a link if you want to live stream the service. A most interesting life, and we're a very big community who are sadly missing that dear man. And I just as a tribute to Russell, I'd like to play a little bit of film music.
When all the world is a hopeless jumble and the raindrops tumble all around, heaven opens a magic lane. When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow highway to be found. Just a step beyond the rain. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me. What smelled like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops. That's where you find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly. Upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops. That's where you upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me. If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why can't
And we play that as a tribute to our dear friend, Mr. Campbell, as we used to call him. We hope he flies somewhere over the rainbow. And that was Andre Rio played that from an album called In Wonderland. And we told you a little bit about the local news and art in Dunedin. What about what's happening out there in the world? My daughter used to go, she studied in Roosevelt University in Chicago, and I went to Chicago a number of times, one of the things that fascinated me in Chicago, the architecture is absolutely wonderful. You would imagine that it's like Gotham City, you would imagine Batman's signal shining up in the sky anywhere at any time. But it's not bereft of modern art as well. And Anish Kapoor's Cloud Gate is a very popular attraction in Chicago. And every time I go there, it's very central, and you tend to be attracted to this amazing sculpture. It's a huge, like a bean. In fact, it's called bean. I don't know whether that's a nickname or not. It is the shape of a bean. It's huge. It's made of material that is reflective, so you can stand anywhere around it and get a reflection of all the things that are that surround the bean. Fans and prospective visitors, they won't be able to see the public artwork until next year due to construction at Millennium Park, which is a bit of a shame. There's the Department of Cultural Affairs in Chicago and Special Events posted an alert on its website to say that construction has started. This was in It will be going on until spring 2024. So it's going to limit public access and views of the Cloud Gate, which is a shame. It's a necessary maintenance, they said. It'll replace pavers and make other repairs and accessibility upgrades to the plaza to enhance the nearly 20-year-old park's appearance, visitor experience and position as the number one attraction in the Midwest, the department says. Just to describe this Cloud Gate, you may have seen it in pictures around the place. Just a huge bean shape. It's 33 feet high. It was established in 2006. So if you haven't been to Chicago since 2006, you won't have seen it, of course. It's 42 feet wide and 66 feet long. That is big, making it one of the world's largest public art installations. The $23 million sculpture is comprised of 168 stainless steel plates welded together and then polished to a mirror finish, making it extremely popular for selfies and other photographs. And I shamelessly admit, I have done just that. It is almost de rigueur that you do that. In 2017, the British Indian artist told Art News about his complicated feelings about the sculpture's popularity and its ability to incite strong opinions. When I first did Cloud Gate in Chicago, I saw those pictures of hundreds of people around the piece and I thought, oh God, what have I done? Is this Disneyland? He said. So I decided to go to Chicago to try to understand what's really going on there. It didn't take me long to understand that actually there is something mysterious about that object, and its mystery is to do with its scale. And that comes down to just one simple fact. It has no joints. Cloud Gate has also been a featured location for several television shows and movies, including Chicago Med, The Breakup, Source Code, The Vow, The Beast, and the fourth installment of the film franchise Transformers. The popularity of Cloud Gate has led Kapoor to accuse the Chinese city of Karamei of plagiarism and also to sue the National Rifle Association of America for copyright infringement after the group included an image of the sculpture in two videos. Now, there is now a smaller version by the artist that finally opened earlier this year, and it's at the base of a luxury residential tower in Manhattan after years of delay. So if you do go to Chicago, do not miss the opportunity to examine the bean. When they have finished the construction in and around it, it will be back to its pristine self, which is the way it is to be enjoyed. Let's look at some other things. Here's something everybody would have loved to have had happen in their lives. A lifeguard and a beach guy in a central Italian beach. And they're at work on a beach in central Italy, and did double duty this weekend, the lifeguard did, when he took on the role of amateur archaeologist after a beach goer came across a 2nd century amphora. And you know what an amphora is? So it's like an enormous vase. And they used to store things in the amphora. And he was having a leisurely walk, according to the Italian news outlet Il Messaggero, and the conditions along the beach in Latina, the capital of Italy's Lazio region, were perfect for a stroll. The day was hot, in the low 80s, and the sea was exceptionally clear. Incidentally, those are the reasons and conditions that make finding an artifact from antiquity as easy as skipping stones. The flaneur was enjoying his walk along the shore of the Pontine beach when he spotted something not normally seen among the shells, umbrellas and bits of driftwood that usually pepper a beach. A tall, thin jar known as an amphora, used in ancient times to transport wine and oil, among other things, along the shipping routes that border Italy. The man called the closest lifeguard, an unnamed 19-year-old stationed not far away, and the lifeguard, with extreme caution, lifted the amphora out of the sand by its neck. He then called the Coast Guard, who sent Commodore Samuel Sasso to retrieve the artifact. Experts have described the Dressel 2.4 amphora as perfectly preserved and believe it to have washed up on shore overnight. According to ANSA, the amphora will likely be housed in a museum in Latina founded by Benito Mussolini in the 1930s after the draining of the Pontine marshes. So there's an interesting, you never know what you're going to come across when you're walking on the beach. It could happen to you. Certainly there are all sorts of things that are found on beaches in New Zealand. Greenstone, for one, along the west coast, and various parts of Wales, which include skeletons and perhaps their skulls, whale bones. Greenstone, I understand, is actually owned by the local Maori tribe. And they strongly protect their ownership of that. And I believe, too, that whale bones are similarly under the aegis of a Maori tribe. So be very careful when you're going near those things. What other art news have we got? Well, this is an interesting departure from Mr. Banksy, which you hear a lot about. He has a mural called Valentine's Day Mascara. And wait for it, it is being publicly sold at $153 a share. Now, there's a new, he's certainly full of interesting ideas. I think one of them more recently was the destruction of one of his paintings set in a frame, and unbeknownst but to anybody else, it was a disguised shredder. And when they put the painting, the Banksy painting, up for sale, it immediately shredded in front of the crowd. And I think it actually increased the value of the work enormously, as if it wasn't already worth an awful lot of money. However, the public mural that's the subject of my piece today is the public mural painted about domestic violence entitled Valentine's Day Mascara. And it's being sold back to members of the public for $153 a share. The London-based Red 8 Galleries is brokering the deal between the owner of the townhouse property in the British city of Margate, where the mural was painted originally. And it's an interesting idea that the idea of a fractional ownership platform. The mural has an estimated value of $7.64 million, which is £6 million, through an evaluation by Robin Barton of Bank Robber Gallery, an interesting name, the fractional ownership sale of Valentine's Day Mascara took place on August the 22nd with a total of 27,000 shares. Realistically, we're looking to achieve between $1 million and $1.5 million, the art newspaper was told. The mural features a 1950s-style housewife with a swollen black eye, a bruised cheek, a swollen lower lip, and a knocked-out tooth. She wears a bright blue gingham dress, an apron, yellow latex gloves, and has her arms out. She was initially shown standing next to an open-chest freezer and an upturned plastic lawn chair. The woman appeared to have disposed of an abusive male partner. Only the man's pant cuffs, black socks, and black dress shoes could be seen poking out of the appliance. The mural was removed twice in Margate, first by officials from the Thanet District Council, then by workers after the owner of the property where the mural was painted called a London gallery for assistance. Red 8 Gallery CEO Julian Usher told ITV News that the installation of plexiglass and the removal of the chest freezer were bought both for security reasons, citing the high cost of guards to protect it around the clock. While Banksy confirmed the work was genuine on Instagram, Usher said the mural had not been authenticated by the artist's studio pest control. The lack of authentication means we can take it to an auction house, he told the art newspaper. There is a grey secondary market for these pieces, but in the current financial market, those people are just not there. Historically, Banksy and Pest Control do not condone the sale of any work taken out of its original context, with only a few exceptions. Even without that stamp of approval, the mural Crowbar Girl was sold for an estimated $2.4 million to a private buyer after it was extracted from the wall of an electric shop in November 2021. You may remember that. I think it made quite big news, as has this one made quite big news. Recently, the mural is on display at the amusement park Dreamland Margate, and an agreement has been reached with the owner to show it there for at least 12 months. Usher told the art newspaper he spent 2 months sourcing experts to properly remove the work from the building, which took place at the end of April at a total cost of nearly $250,000, so that takes a bit of a chunk out of it already. The plan is for Valentine's Day mascara to remain on display for at least 24 months at Dreamland Margate, where it has been on temporary view. Some of the proceeds of the sales, the fractional ownership shares, will go to the very cause depicted in Valentine's Day mascara. Showpiece has agreed to donate some of the proceeds to the UK domestic violence charity Refuge. The owner of the mural has also pledged a six-figure sum to Oasis, a charity in Margate which supports families seeking to leave and recover from domestic abuse. So it's all good. It's a wonderful cause, and hopefully it goes off with some success. But one of the always strange and unusual Banksy keeps on, that the mysterious Banksy keeps on appearing in the press, getting the kind of publicity that named artists would love to have levelled at them. Well, I think a little bit of music might go well. Something a little peaceful. We won't make you feel that you're battered around about the head in the Arty Farty show, which you're listening to on Radio Otago, Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM. And here is a lovely piece of quiet, gentle, soothing music from an album called Earth Songs by none other than Secret Garden. Listen to some more of these if you get a chance, and have a listen to this example, and I do hope you enjoy it. Well, wasn't that beautiful? That is from an album called Earth Songs, and it is the band, or the ensemble, is called Secret Garden. And I never fail to listen to a Secret Garden track without stopping and listening, because it really is, they really are beautiful musicians. More art news I thought we could discuss. It's a sort of a sad story, really, because Jean-Michel Basquiat is a famous artist, quite controversial in many ways. And he made himself known really as a street artist. Sadly, like so many, he had committed suicide. It's a very sad thing that he did, because his paintings, of course, have gone sky high in terms of price, and not the least of people taking advantage of this possibility is an auctioneer who helped produce fake Basquiat's, and he managed to get away with the skin of his face, of his teeth, by avoiding a jail time, but he did receive probation. He pleaded guilty to helping produce a group of faked Jean-Michel Basquiat paintings, has avoided jail times instead of receiving a sentence of probation and community service from a Los Angeles court on Friday. And the case was related to the saga surrounding a 2022 exhibition about Basquiat held at the Orlando Museum of Art in Florida. And that show touched off an FBI raid, and legal action is still going. Included in the show were a group of works that the museum's director at the time, Aaron de Groft, claimed that had been produced in 1982 while the artist lived in Los Angeles. He said that after that, they were left in a storage unit, then forgotten. De Groff claimed there were major rediscoveries, but doubt started to emerge after the New York Times ran an investigation that questioned these works' authenticity. One expert on branding seized on the FedEx typeface that appeared in one of those paintings. He said the shipping company hadn't started to use that typeface until 1994, more than a decade after these works were allegedly produced. After the FBI investigated the 25 paintings, seizing them in a dramatic raid that made headlines around the world, Michael Barsman, the auctioneer who today was sentenced, well, I say today, well, it wasn't today, but it was when this article was presented, which was August the 18th, not so long ago. The auctioneer was today was sentenced to probation, was interviewed by federal agents. Speaking to them in 2022, he claimed he had no role in the production of the works. Then in 2023, he pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, lying about this further, saying that he had built out a false provenance for the paintings. That provenance was intended to act as documentation for the storage unit narrative. De Groft, along with two co-owners of the paintings, had stated that Barsman is not telling the truth. LA prosecutors had been seeking the sentence Barsman ultimately received, which first reported the news, the New York Times. Barsman had a difficult life physically and emotionally and suffered from substance abuse and financial difficulties. I'm sure this didn't make it any easier. His sentence involved 3 years of probation, 500 hours of community service, and a fine of $500. Barsman's lawyer told the Times that the auctioneer is never going to reoffend. I would hope not. Meanwhile, the investigation into the faked Basquiat's continues, as does the legal intrigue. Earlier this week, the Orlando Museum of Art sued de Groft, whom it had fired not long after the FBI raid in the summer of 2022. The museum alleges that de Graaf had made efforts to profit from putting the Basquiats in the exhibition and that he was attempting to do something similar with paintings by Titian and Jackson Pollock that were not in the show. He has denied wrongdoing up to this point. You would have thought he would be a bit more, there'd be a bit more attrition being showed there, because it seems to be quite a popular kind of a crime, really. Well, folks, we've had an interesting kind of arty-farty show today, and I'm very pleased that you are still listening. Thank you very much for those of you who are still listening. And it's Ron Esplin that is your current host, and normally we would have a wonderful co-host, Andy Cook from the art gallery, which we all know and love, in Hanover Street, and I hope you go along to speak to him. He's certainly got the best selection of at Art Zone, the best selection of materials and paper and goodness knows what, and they come highly recommended, and of course framing. If you want any framing done, that's where you want to go, because he is not only is a trained framer, and he is also very, very obliging. He will advise you if you're concerned about the colours or whatever and the sizes and whatnot. And I strongly suggest that you go there and discuss it with him. He's open every day except Monday. That is, or maybe Sunday as well, sorry. He makes up for it by opening on a Saturday between the hours of 10 and 4:30. You can go there in the weekend as well. And, of course, you can certainly go along and see Andy and... you can also find him on the internet if you want to buy some lovely either artworks or things to make artworks. I urge you to use his wonderful expertise. I've got a few things here that might be of some interest. I rather like quotations, arty quotations. And the one that I've got here is, what is it, Ron? Thomas Merton. Art enables us to find ourselves and lose ourselves at the same time. Ha ha, I like it. What else? We've got another one here that I fished out on the weekend. Edgar Degas, I love this. Painting is easy when you don't know how, but very difficult when you do. Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Mr. Edgar Degas. These guys, you know, they're artists. We know their names thoroughly over time, over many years. But it's interesting to see they're real people. And the more you read about these people, the more you find out about their personalities. And there are wide-ranging personalities amongst the field of artists, for sure. We've pretty much reached the end of our program today. I'd like to thank Otago Access Radio for allowing us to host this program here in their wonderful studio, which is about just going to was probably pretty much might be changed by the time this goes to air. So we hope so. And I'm going to play you a very short little, not too short, a bit of music, which it's 10cc, and it's not going to be art for art's sake. It's going to be, the title actually is, I don't know what it is. Let's find out, eh? Right, okay, we'll do it. We'll be right back.
run to get me by. I see people traveling, never make a move. I don't follow my leader, needles in the groove. I don't like sitar, it don't touch guitar. I love to see it break. It's not a chemical wide awake. I like a rub and a tug. I never wanna pull out the plug. I get up on top and down on Mr. Blue.
An abrupt ending for 10cc, and good advice for artists and for viewers. Listen with your eyes. Thank you. It's goodbye from the Arty Farty Show, and have a great week. Do some painting. Draw a line a day. Yes, sir.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.